Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Completely relaxed in a way that our Sunday mornings we're working on. We've moved up to 5 minutes of silence,
right.
And nobody's restless, so it's good. Well, it's good to be here today. I did get my MDiv from CLU, and I also got my postmaster's certificate in spiritual direction there. And I think that it was towards the end of my time at CLU when I made my synthesis presentation that I found myself saying, I am a spiritual director who also happens to be a pastor. And as I said it, it wasn't scripted, it wasn't something I planned, and as I said it, I realized just how much that had permeated who I was and in my journey all along. I want to start by telling you a story. It's a story that I was gifted by conference that I went to where Marcus Borg once spoke. And Marcus Borg told this story about this mountain that spanned the globe. And this mountain was absolutely enormous. And it was so large and so tall that it spanned, the base of it spanned latitudes. So there were tropical latitudes and there were Arctic latitudes and there were latitudes much like ours. But it spanned all the latitudes. And at the base of this mountain, there were people. And they would be gathered within their own communities. And each of these people wanted to know, had a search for meaning. Some were searching for God, some were searching to be enlightened, some were searching for an expression of the sacred or of their deeper selves that had no name, but all of them were searching. And at the bottom of the mountain, the people who lived in the tropical region wore very light-fitting cotton clothes that that allowed for the air to flow around them and keep them cool. And the people who lived in the Arctic region would bundle up in clothes to stay warm. And all of these people, all of these different people, were all dressed appropriately for the latitude in which they found themselves. And Borg said, then the people began to climb the mountain to search for God, to search for the sacred, to search for meaning, to search for their true selves. But as they began to climb the mountain, they naturally got just a little beyond the atmosphere, the weather of their latitude. So the people in the tropics, as they began to climb the mountain, would find that, oh my goodness, my clothes aren't quite enough. I need to find a little bit more to cover myself because it's colder here. And yet the people who were in the Arctic area, they would climb the mountain and they would say, my goodness, these clothes that we're wearing are just entirely too hot. And I'm starting to sweat and I'm going to have to remove some of these clothes. And so these people were climbing the mountain, and you can see where this is going, as they continued to climb the mountain, more and more and more people put clothes on, and people took clothes off, and people wore warm fabrics, and people wore loose-fitting fabrics. And suddenly, as they got higher and higher and higher in the mountain, the people began to notice people that they hadn't seen before. And suddenly they looked and dressed very much like they did themselves. And when they reach the top of the mountain to this very enlightened, divine, sacred space, what they learned was that they were all thirsting for the same thing. And to get to this space of the mountaintop, they had become very much like one another, or they had been able to set aside that which kept them different. And Bork said, slowly, the people realized that they had to return to their own villages and they had to go back down the mountain. And the admonition at the top of the mountain that each one of them had been given was two things. One, don't run around the base of the mountain saying your clothes are the best or that other people need to dress like you. But also, when you walk around the base of the mountain, try on other clothes and try on other things and try on other ideas. And remember that at the top of the mountain, you are all one and you are all very much alike. That story stayed with me throughout my journey at Seattle University, and I told Koshin I brought my three favorite books with me. I brought my Bible. I brought Thich Nhat Hanh's The Miracle of Mindfulness. And I brought Rumi's Book of Love. And each of these three books have gifted me with something really, really meaningful for my journey. I did not know very much at all about Buddhism growing up in North Carolina. I'm sure Chapel Hill was the only place where there was any real noticeable expression, maybe in the mountains, you know, in Asheville probably.
When I'd go home to my grandfolks' place, I'd say, if somebody would ask me what I was doing, I'd say, I'm a Buddhist. But I'd say it so fast, I'd hope they'd say back. They'd hear Baptist.
And I love the way life weaves people together, because Koshin and I literally grew up less than 100 miles from one another. And he grew up Presbyterian. But in the course of my journey and my time in seminary at Seattle University was pretty much my running around the base of the mountain and my climbing the mountain and my learning more and more that some of the clothes that I had been born with just simply didn't fit me. And even though I express my faith and I come into relationship with the sacred through a Christian lens, many of the Christian clothes no longer fit me, nor did I want to wear them at all. And I did the typical journey. I waxed and waned. I like to say I had a love-hate relationship with Jesus. I had a love-hate relationship with the cross. Had a love-hate relationship with a lot of expressions of my faith. But along the way, because I began the process of climbing this mountain in an interfaith setting at CLU, I was gifted with an understanding of what it means to be mindful. At least my understanding, my limited understanding of what it means to be. And I'm terribly sensitive about co-opting other faiths because it's very on trend sometimes, especially Buddhism can be very it can be easy for people to say, well, you know, I like the word namaste, or I do yoga, or, you know, all these different expressions. And that's certainly not something that I ever want to do. And I'm incredibly respectful of the just deep and tremendous gift that it is and the tremendous expression and tradition. And so when this little book, and this is my probably 10th copy of it since I got it in the first time in 2010, in the fall of 2010, this is probably about my 10th copy because they fall apart, because I read them so much. But I remember being given this book and just being struck by this man's picture and just what gentleness was in his face, and turning open the first page, and I went to seminary right after I was widowed, And I opened this book, and the first page, the first thing I read, I had young kids at home, teenagers, and who were navigating grief. I was navigating grief and graduate school, which made sense at the time, but sounds kind of crazy now. And I came home one day with this book in hand and to a sink full of dirty dishes. And one of the first chapters is how to do dishes. And I thought, what is this sweet little man going to tell me about how to do dishes? And what he told me was that doing dishes would change my life. And I read through it, and suddenly as I was picking up the dish, and I was feeling the dish, and I was washing the dish, and I was touching it, and I was just being with it, and being with the water, and being with my role in this moment, all these things began to drop away. All these things that were weighing on me just began to drop away. And I thought, I'm just going to do dishes. And I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be with these dishes. And it was an extraordinary, worshipful, transformational moment in my life. And it was one of the, people talk about having a God moment. It was one of the biggest God moments of my life. And I got through with the dishes, and I dried them all, and I put them away, just loving and crying over them. I mean, I kept rinsing off tears because I kept crying on these dishes, that I immediately sat down and just began to read the next thing. And then I made tea. And everything became this moment. And then I ate a tangerine. And everything became this moment that changed who I was and changed my understanding of what I had to be or what I didn't have to be. And it allowed me to take off a lot of the clothes that I wore as a Southern Christian woman who grew up with the baggage of being a Southern Christian woman. And I just began to take off some of these clothes in a way that that nothing had ever empowered me to do. And I kind of pushed away from a lot of Christian scriptures for a period of time. But when I went back, but of course graduate school pulled me back right to them. But when I went back to the Hebrew scriptures, I read Psalm 8. And in Psalm 8, it says that that God is mindful of human beings. And I started thinking about God picking me up and holding me in these sacred hands and washing me and drying me and filling the water. And that everything for this sacred being dropped away because the divine being was solely with me. And it was this moment of just grace. It was just this moment of grace for me. So I carried that lens of mindfulness through my time in seminary, through my time in job searching and all these different things. And I've carried it, I've certainly carried it into my ministry, and it's probably been one of the most helpful things. You know, when people come to the Presbyterian pastor, they have kind of a standard idea of what kind of pastoral care they're expecting if they tell you they're going through a difficult time. And it's been such a gift to me to teach other people my understanding of mindfulness and what that's gifted me with, because it's allowed me, in walking with a family right now through just a tremendous amount of grief, and being able to share with them what it means to be present with grief, what it means to embrace grief, what it means to greet it from a place of mindfulness, and to let your mindful self say, "Hello, grief. It's good to have you here. I will care for you too," and to be able to hold that. I realized how powerfully it had been embedded in who I am last summer. My family had an interesting experience last summer. It was just, with hindsight, I can say we entered a space of disequilibrium in our family system. And my son went through a really difficult experience that was just completely upended us, upended me. And I went right into Pastor Kirshen here because pastors need pastoral care. So I went right into Pastor Kirshen here. But just completely upended our family. And as I sat with my emotions and as I journaled about them, I realized that the primary emotion I was having was fear. And then I immediately remembered all that I had read about fear and mindfulness. And I thought, you know, how did I lose this? How did I lose my intention to be a mindful person and to steward all my other feelings through that lens? So I began to sit down and greet my fear, to welcome it and say, ah, I know you. I've lived with you before, and you certainly know your way around my space and your way around my thoughts. And welcome. And I'm going to allow my mindful side, my understanding of what it means to be with you, to care for you and to embrace you and to allow you to speak what you need to say, but not to have power over me. And in that process of journaling through that and of just sitting in silence with that dialogue, I recognized the gift that it had given me to be present with what I feel, to be present with the humanness of my life, to be present with fear and grief and sorrow and all the things that come to us, and to receive them, not to tense up and push them away, but to receive them and simply to sit with them and be with them. And I thirst for that. And the more I'm with other people and the more I listen to the people who come to me, the more I realize we all thirst for that. And it takes me back to the mountain, that thirst to continue climbing. But these things of this life, they just pull at us and demand attention, and we resist giving them attention. But to pick them up like a cup in your hand and to feel them for what they are and to spend that time with them and to dry them and then let them be, for me, that's just been the gift of what it means to be mindful. And I know so very little about it. But it's given me a thirst to walk with it and to draw back to it and to hang out with Kirshen when I can, and to recognize that that we're all on this journey, and this journey is about something that can change our lives, and however we name it or phrase it. But, you know, my intention for my life is to know myself. And more than anything else, just to know myself. And how can I know myself if I'm not mindful of what I feel and what I experience and of who I am? So, kind of it.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.